What's your dream job or your biggest goal in life? Do you believe you've reached that dream? If not, what's stopping you from getting there? And what would it take to get that barrier out of the way and finally live your dream? Today's guest shares her path from childhood dream to finding success in the entertainment industry through belief from her peers, a belief in herself, and by writing and calling herself a writer until it was her main profession. Welcome to Unleash Your Inner Creative with Lauren LaGrasso. I'm Lauren LaGrasso. I'm an award-winning podcast host and producer, singer-songwriter, public speaker, and creative coach. I'm best known for producing hit shows such as We Can Do Hard Things with Glennon Doyle, Brené Brown's Unlocking Us, Lauren Conrad Asking for a Friend, and my show, this very one you're listening to, Unleash Your Inner Creative. This podcast sits at the intersection of creativity, mental health, self-development, and spirituality, and it is meant to give you tools to trust, love, and know yourself enough to claim your right to creativity and pursue whatever it is that's on your heart. In the month of April, Unleash Your Inner Creative is collaborating with my alma mater, Michigan State University, aka MSU, and their student-run radio station, Impact 89 FM. Each week this month, you'll hear a remarkable MSU student or alumni who is doing great creative work out in the world and or on campus. These episodes will air both on Impact 89 FM as well as on the usual Unleash Your Inner Creative podcast feed. If you're listening on the radio right now, hi. Welcome to Unleash. I am so happy and thrilled to have you in the creative community. If you like what you hear today, you can go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to learn more about the show and hear more episodes. If you're a regular Unleash listener, you can check out The Impact at impact89fm.org for more info on the station, their shows, and to listen live. Today's guest is Lior Barris. She's a professional TV writer, MSU alumna, and one of my favorite college pals. Lior wanted to work in animation from the time she could talk. Since moving to Los Angeles, she has done just that and carved out an incredibly successful career for herself. She has written on action-adventure comedies such as Kipo and the Age of Wonder Beasts and My Little Pony, Make Your Mark. She's also explored younger audiences, writing for shows such as Nickelodeon's Bossy Bear and Mattel's Thomas and Friends, All Engines Go. Before writing, she worked as a production manager on many shows and several movies for DC Comics. Lior has been a friend of mine since I attended Michigan State University. We worked on The Show, which, if you don't know, is America's longest-running college sitcom. I was an actor at the time, and she was a writer and producer. And Lior's story is one I wanted to tell because I actually learned only once we moved here that I had a significant impact on her creative journey, and I had no idea. So her story to me is an important reminder that one sentence of encouragement can really change the course of somebody's life, and that when you see talent in someone, you should never be afraid to reflect it back to them. Her story is also a testament to what belief in yourself can do. Lior took so many leaps of faith and had a firm vision for her life and career that have gotten her to where she is today. From today's chat, you'll learn how to keep your creative passion alive even while working a day job, how to get your start in Hollywood, the behind-the-scenes process of writing for the screen, how to approach networking from a place of true connection, how to overcome imposter syndrome, and much more. Okay, now here she is, Lior Barris. Lior, thank you so much for being on Unleash Your Inner Creative. I can't believe you're here right now.
Yeah, I'm so excited to be here.
Okay, you and I have known each other since we were basically fetuses.
Yeah, in the womb.
In the womb. But take me back to when you were very little. I read in your bio that you have wanted, since you were a little girl, to work in animation. When did that dream first get ignited in your soul?
So I think it actually got ignited before I even knew what TV was, to be honest. I have a video of me at 3 years old saying that I'm going to be a director. I don't know why I knew what a director was. I don't know how I knew what a director was, but I wanted to be a director. And throughout my whole childhood, everything changed. I wanted to be a director. I wanted to be an editor. I wanted to be a producer. I never wanted to be a writer, which is what I became. But I just knew I wanted to be in TV. I was obsessed with TV. I loved TV. It was an escape. It was fun. It was worlds I wanted to live in. My whole life I knew.
And to be clear, I mean, we grew up in Michigan, so it wasn't like there were a bunch of like directors and producers hanging on, you know, street corners. It was kind of a different type of dream to grow up wanting. How did people react when you told them as like a little girl, I'm going to be a director someday, I'm going to work in TV someday? And how'd you deal with that?
People were encouraging for the most part. I mean, even I remember at my bat mitzvah, I got instead of money, one person gave me like a whole big set of how to be a director book. Aww. Like different books about how to be a director, because that's how emphatic I was about it. I was like, I will be working in TV someday. And I got a camera with my money that I got from my bat mitzvah. Like it was always the goal. It was always what I wanted.
So then let's go to Michigan State, which is where we met. And I'm acting on the show, which is, for those that don't know, the America's longest running college sitcom, still going strong at the MSU Telecasters. You were working on the show as a producer, and then something happened. It was, I think, a fate moment that allowed you to step in and realize this passion and natural ability for writing. So take me through that moment.
So, yes, I love this story. It was really a coincidence. Somebody asked me to be a writer on the show. I knew that I could write, but I didn't really think about that being my journey. And I eventually got asked to write the finale episode of the show. And I know like people who didn't go to Michigan State don't understand that this is a big deal.
Huge deal.
This is a big deal. This show started in 1988, which is the same year that I started. So it's a long time. And I got asked to write the finale episode, and a lot of the main actors were graduating, so it was going to be a big deal. And so we decided to do it live in front of a studio audience.
Yes.
And it was amazing. It was incredible. I remember that moment where I got a standing ovation at the end, and it felt empowering. It felt wonderful. And this actress, I don't know if you've heard of her. Her name's Lauren LaGrasso. she walked up to me and she said, Lior, if you don't go to LA and become a writer, you're making a mistake. And I was like, what? But the power of encouragement in that moment, it changed my trajectory. It changed my life because I had never thought about being a writer. I was going to be a producer. Mm. I was going to be an editor. I was going to be a director. I was going to be something. But I was never going to be a writer until that moment.
So that is just, I mean, it makes me cry, first of all, because it was just so clear to me in that moment. And sometimes, I don't know what it is, but like something strikes through my body. And I'm like, you need to tell this person this. That was one of those moments. It was just so clear to me because there have been people who were writing and been a part of the show for far longer than you that didn't get the intricacies of the characters, that weren't hitting the jokes the way you were, that didn't have this like natural ability for story arc that you had. And I don't know. I just felt I had to say something. Totally unsolicited advice.
Yeah.
But it really resonated with you. And so you've said that was like the moment you decided?
That was the moment. I had no idea before that. I had no idea that I wanted to be a writer until you said that. And it all hit me like this voice from the sky. It was like, Lauren LaGrasso told you, if you don't go to LA to become a writer, you're making a mistake. And that was what I took with me for the rest of my life so far is, well, Lauren said I'm making a mistake. I can't make a mistake. I got to keep going. Who wants to make a mistake? It rung true with me because I don't think you were just saying what you felt. You were saying what I think I deep down knew, but never addressed.
How did you know that was the truth for you? Like, what did you feel? You said it rang true. What did you feel in your body when I reflected your talent back to you?
It was partly in the experience of writing the episodes too.
Yeah.
Writing those episodes unlocked something in me that I don't think anything had unlocked before. And so after writing those episodes and getting that standing ovation and your words of encouragement, it just like all kind of was like pieces to a puzzle that I didn't know I was trying to solve.
Mm.
And I just knew you were right in that moment. I knew you were right.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Because, I mean, here's the beautiful thing about Lior. The first big job she got, it was on Netflix, right? You were writing for a Netflix show?
My first writing job?
Yeah.
Yeah, my first writing job was a DreamWorks show for Netflix.
Okay. And we're going to get there. We're going to get into the full story, so you'll hear the trajectory. But Lior is this kind of person that doesn't forget when somebody touches her life. You are. And you texted me and said, like, listen, I just want you to know, like, I just got this job. And it started because you said this to me. And I just think that's such an important thing because we don't achieve our dreams alone. That's why I end every episode saying to my listeners, I believe in you, because somebody's belief in you can be the moment that like puts you over the edge. And so I just thought it was so beautiful that you reached out. And that's why I wanted to have you on, because first of all, you've got an amazing story. I think it's going to inspire people to know that like they're where you started, but also it's an incredible full circle moment.
Well, it's all about the power of encouragement. I really believe that when you dim other people's light, mm-hmm. you're dimming your own light.
Yeah.
Right? And so when you encourage other people, you're encouraging yourself. I really go out of my way as best as I can to remind people what they've done for me. Mm-hmm. Because then people remember what you do for them. It's like full circle. We're helping each other. You don't get to the top by yourself.
Yeah. And in the same token, like you were always so supportive of me as an actress. Like then when I went into music with music and yeah, one hand washes the other. So, okay. You're like, okay, I guess I'm going to be a writer now.
I guess 22. I'm a writer. Yeah.
How do you get from that realization to moving to LA?
So the first thing I did was write my first script that was not through school for the Nickelodeon Fellowship, which I thought was fantastic. But years later, I looked back and realized I was all over the place. Format was wrong. Wasn't correct. So I ended up going into just production.
Yeah.
I worked
and,
on
and
set.
Just to be clear, the Nickelodeon Fellowship was like a fellowship writing program that like got you into the fold at Nickelodeon.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
So you applied to that. It didn't work out at the time. So you decided to go toward production.
Yes. And okay. Animation was my dream. Nickelodeon was my dream. DreamWorks, Warner Brothers, those were all my dreams. I decided to start working on set. And I actually, my very first job in the industry was a stand-in for a game show for NBC.
That's pretty cool.
And I will say that I won $1 million. I'm the only person that won $1 million. And they were all in shock. And I feel like even though I was a stand-in, I feel like they owe it to me.
Yeah, you should have gotten that.
I should have got $1 million. But that's okay. I forgive them. At the end of my first episode as a stand-in, they said, will you come back for the next episode? And I said, you know, I'm going to take a chance here. I'd love to come back, but could I come back as a production assistant? And they were like, why not? So that was it. That was the start. I started as a stand-in. I worked my way to production assistant. I worked my way to key production assistant. And then I was off to the races.
While you're in this part of your career where you're working in production, which that was your initial dream, was to like produce, direct, be more on that side of things. How do you make sure you keep your writing alive? Because that's the thing. Like so many people, you graduate college, you know exactly what you want to do. But when you go into entertainment, there's not this like A plus B equals C clear path. So you have to be concurrently pursuing these multiple careers a lot of the time. And so how did you do that? How did you make sure to keep the writer inside of you alive while you are working these other jobs?
That's a great question because it's not easy. It's mm-hmm. not easy to pursue two jobs at once. I truly loved producing. I loved working in production and I loved writing and I wanted both to be my life. So it all goes back to this one day for me. I was at a party with one of my best friends mm-hmm. and this man came up to us and he was asking us, what do you do? And I said, oh, I'm a post supervisor, whatever I was doing at the time. And my friend Kelsey stops me and she goes, she's a writer. And I was like, well, I mean, and he goes, well, do you want to be a writer? I said, I want to be a writer. And he said, then tell people you're a writer. You're a writer then. Be a writer. And it sounds so silly, but I don't really like using the word aspiring writer. I don't mm-hmm. like wannabe writer. It's I was a writer. I was writing every day. I was reading. I was trying to be a writer. So if I just like fulfilled that energy of being like, I am a writer, I became a writer. So I was working my day job, but I was also working my other job because it wasn't just my hobby anymore. It was my destiny. And I felt that powerfully. So, you know, it was hard to maintain, definitely yeah. hard to maintain. But
well, I love that because it speaks to what I talk about a lot, which is that there's no such thing as aspiring. If you're doing the thing, you are the thing. So if you are a musician and you're going out and playing gigs and you're doing open mics and you're posting videos online, you're a musician. You might not be making your full living from it yet, but that doesn't take away from your artistry. And so stepping into the worthiness of owning what you are and what you want to do is huge. The other thing, you know, that I'm always intrigued by is you listening. You'll hear throughout the course of Lior's story how much she believes in her own worthiness And we all have that inherently, but sometimes it's hard to really own that, to know that you deserve to take up space and be here and have the dreams that you have. Because that sounds like that was a turning point for you where you really learned to step into your worthiness there. What's your advice for somebody who's feeling a little bashful or shy or like they don't deserve to want what they want?
I think we all are worthy.
Yeah.
I just really do. I really think we're all worthy. And I think that what gets in our way is ourselves. So I had a motto. I've always had a motto. If they can do it, so can I. If they can be a writer, so can I. If that random person who had a dream can do it, so can I. And that was just always what I said to myself. And you know, you don't always believe it, but you got to keep saying it because it's true. Why can't you? Yeah. Why can they do it, but you can't? You can.
Right.
You just have to keep pushing forward and saying, if they can do it, so can I.
So you almost like hypnotize yourself into it.
I hypnotized myself. I tricked myself. You're fake it till you make
it. Sometimes you have to. I think that's the bigger thing. Like, you're not really faking it toward other people. You have to believe it yourself. Mm-hmm. So it's like, even if it is, you're hypnotizing yourself or you're tricking yourself into believing it because you just repeat it so many times and you put in the work. Because the other thing I want to ask is, okay, so you're working this job. Maybe it's like 9 to 5, 9 to 6. So then are you coming home and writing? Like, what were the actual tactics to make sure that you wrote every day?
You know, I don't write every day. Mm-hmm. I don't write every day. I don't think anybody has to write every day. I think different people give different advice on this, but I don't think you have to write every single day to be a writer. I think sometimes you just have to really care about your writing and you have to do the writing, which a lot of writers don't.
That's the rub.
Yeah, some writers don't actually like to write, but you just have to be invested in it. You have to set the time for it, even if it's not every day. There was a point in my career where I took a job part-time. I left a full-time job and went part-time just so that I could go to the library twice a week and write.
Yeah.
That was a big chance, but I knew if I didn't dedicate to it, it wasn't going to happen.
Right. So during that time when you were working a full-time production job, when were you writing?
Usually lunch breaks, after work, you know, all day. If I had an idea, I was emailing it to myself. I was keeping a notebook. I have a notebook right here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm always taking notes for myself. Every conversation might ring a note for myself that I write down. I email it to myself.
Right.
So really all day.
Okay.
My head is always in the writing space, but you're not always doing the dedicated right on the page.
Totally. So it's like preparation work a lot of the time that leads into writing.
I always say that writing is like 80% thinking and talking.
Ah.
It's only 20% actually sitting down and writing, but it's 80% talking to people, thinking about things, stewing in your head. You know, it's only 20% you sit in front of a computer and you actually do the writing itself.
Okay. I like that. So I want to get more into your process, but before we go there, let's go back to the journey. So you're doing this production assistant work. You're working all kinds of jobs. You end up getting like a big girl producer job at Warner Brothers, was it?
Yeah, I was a production manager at Warner Brothers. So I was there for 3 years, some of the best years of my life. Absolutely loved working for Warner Brothers.
It's a great lot.
It's a great lot. It's a great lot. And it's a great ranch, rest in peace, because it's not there anymore.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Aw.
But it was some of the best years of my life, made amazing friends and amazing connections. And there was a moment where I was given an opportunity to become an associate producer or continue down the path of chasing my writing dream. And it was very clear I had to choose in that moment. What is the path? What are you choosing?
To be clear, like at the end of this like 3 year time period, you were given a potential promotion.
Promotion, yeah.
And so at that time, you were told or realized that you would have to choose between writing, your dream of writing, mm-hmm. and taking this promotion, which would have been more money, a better title, stability, putting you on a track to probably become an executive producer, all these things.
Yeah. And it would have been a fantastic path.
Yeah.
That I would have loved. I would have loved it. But I had this little Lauren LaGrasso angel in my ear going, if you don't become a writer, you're making a mistake. Mm-hmm. And I just wasn't ready or willing to take that chance. So I chose the path of writing. I put in my notice. I emailed every writer I had ever met just to take a chance. And one person responded. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people responded, but one very specific person responded. And I had said to him, you know, I'm Lior. You probably don't remember me. We met for 5 minutes 5 years ago. And he responded back so sweet. And he was like, of course, I remember you. I'd love to talk. And he invited me over to DreamWorks. and we had lunch and we really got to know each other for a couple of hours. And at the end of it, he said, you know, after talking to you, I really want to read your script. And I was like, okay, sure. Me? Yay. and his name was Bill Wolkoff. And 2 weeks later, after I met him, he called me. And I swear I went into a panic. I was like, what did I do? What did I do? Why is he calling? Who did I say something to I shouldn't have said? I was panicked. And I answered the phone. And he said, I read your script and I loved it. And aww. I want to bring you on. I want to bring you on to this show I'm doing. And he said, I can't bring you on as a writer. You're a little too green. But what I can do is bring you on as a script coordinator. And I will treat you like the writer you are. And he held true. He fought to get me that job. And he brought me in as a writer. I felt like a writer on that show. And it was the most beautiful experience. I'm forever grateful to Bill.
Yay,
and
Bill.
To that writer's room. And I still talk to them almost every day. I love them. It was already like 6 years ago.
And what show was it?
That was Kipo and the Age of Wonder Beasts.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. That happened in what time period after leaving the production job?
It happened exactly at the right moment. I left the job at Warner Brothers and I decided, okay, I don't know if I'll get this job officially. There was something sort of in the way from him bringing me on. It was a chance. I said, I'm going to go on a trip for a month. I've been working straight in production for 3 years without a good break. I'm just going to go on a trip. And I did. I traveled for a month. And as I'm walking back to the plane to fly to LA, I get a phone call from DreamWorks. I start on Monday.
Come on. If that's not proof that when you really take a chance on yourself, when you really believe, when you put it out there, when you've put in the work, because you're putting in the work every day, every week, sometimes opportunity meets preparation. What did it feel like to finally know you were on that track? Like, you always had this inner vision to know that you were going toward writing, but then here's the proof, like you're finally on that track. What was the difference in your life between when you were doing something you loved, but you knew wasn't really the ultimate goal, and when you started to step into the ultimate goal of your life?
Well, suddenly it became terrifying.
That is scary.
Yeah.
I've been going through that lately.
Yeah.
When you start to actually be recognized for the things you've been saying you want to be recognized mm-hmm. for, it's like, it's
horrifying.
It's a horrifying moment.
Yeah. It's horrifying because when you're going after something, there's no actual pressure about failing because you haven't actually been given the opportunity to fail or succeed. So when you're given the opportunity and this is something you've wanted, all of a sudden you're like, oh, well, now I actually have to do it well.
Yeah.
And that's scary.
Yeah.
That's very scary. But I really have always lived by figure out the thing that makes you the most afraid and do that, because I really think that our biggest fears are rooted in our purpose.
Yeah.
And the things that make us the most anxious tend to be the things we're supposed to be driven towards. So I try to do that. I try to do the things that freak me out, but, you know,
so
within reason.
You dive into your fears, because that was something, you know, you and I had like a pregame chat before we did this.
Sure.
And you told me whenever you feel that fear, you know it's your time to take a step forward. So how do you get over like that feeling like, oh my God, if I do this, I'm going to die, and move toward if I do this, I'm going to grow?
It's both.
Yes, and.
It's both.
Improv 101, honey buns.
Yeah, yes, and. I mean, I am terrified to do certain things. It's very scary. And, you know, there's this thing called imposter syndrome, and I don't think it ever goes away for almost any creative. You can talk to a creative that's just starting out, and you can talk to a creative that's been doing it for years. And we all have imposter syndrome.
Wow.
And that's because we're all pushing through our fear of being bad at it, our fear of being wrong. And that's what's making us successful, is that even though we are afraid, even though we're having this imposter syndrome, we're still pushing forward.
Mm-hmm.
That's the difference between someone that moves forward and someone that gets stuck.
You don't strike me as someone who has imposter syndrome from the outside looking in. So how do you talk yourself out of that when that little voice is coming up saying like, you don't really know what you're doing. You can't do this. This isn't good enough. You can't do this. How are you talking back to that voice that puts you in a place where, again, you're stepping into your worthiness and into your ability?
Honestly, I hate bullies. I hate bullies. I'm bullying myself in that moment. And I tell myself to stop being a bully.
Yeah.
I can do it. Again, if they can do it, so can I. I've gotten to where I am because I am good enough to do it. And I think so many people are good enough to do it. They're just afraid. But you don't find out until you start doing it.
Love that. So you have to have a two-way conversation with yourself. Like if that little negative voice is going to pop up, you have to also be able to tell it, pipe down, baby.
Shush. Please.
So you have that big job. You're like stepping into this new phase. What is your first real like full writing job after this? And how does it happen?
So I did do as many episodes as I could for Kipo and the Age of Wanderbeast. So that is what I consider my first writing job. But after that, I was a staff writer on Jurassic World Camp Cretaceous, which was a huge project and also very exciting, also for DreamWorks, for Netflix. Completely different from Kipo. So I really went from whimsy and silly to action-packed and dinosaurs. And it was fun. It was fun to sort of stretch myself and see the different types of stories I'm capable of doing.
I have a question. When you're doing this animation, because spoiler alert, Lior also worked on an amazing My Little Pony show, and I was watching that before she was coming. Do you get to like see these little ponies before you write about them? Like, are you writing to some like to your vision? Do they create the ponies? I'm just saying ponies, but like any sort of character after you turn in the script? Like, how does that work? Like, how do these different pieces come together?
Do you mean the visual of it?
Yeah.
It's always different based on the show, based on how long the show's been going. My Little Pony is a good example of characters that I got to create. I wrote a special where I got to create a new villain and I got to create new ponies to sort of
pony be villains.
Pony villains. And, and, you know, I got to create characters. And same with Kipo, we got to create our own characters. I got to create K-pop narwhals. And, you know, it's we create our own characters. And sometimes they're created for us, and both can be fun because I love creating, but I also love challenging myself to give life to things that have already been created.
If someone's listening, they're like, oh my God, writing for animation sounds so cool. I want to do it. Like, what sort of sensibility, Lior, do you think it takes to be good at this job?
Well, certainly the same sensibility it takes to be good at any writing job, because writing for animation is literally no different than writing for live action, writing for feature. It's all the same. It's definitely good to keep that childlike spirit alive, because I think what's special to me about animation is that it's fun.
Mm.
Not all animation is for kids, but for the animation that is for kids, it's, you know, it's fun. It's whimsical. I think everybody writes for different reasons. I always say, don't try to be every type of writer. Be the writer that's special to you. Mm. Because some people are the comedians and some people are referential and they can tell you everything that happened in every movie and every TV show. And some people are the thematic, emotional storylines. And then there's people like me who are world builders and creators. And we like to create new things from nothing that are whimsical and weird and strange. And we all have our different things. So I would say find what your thing is. Don't try to be all the things.
Huh.
Be one thing and be it well.
How do you find your thing?
You start to write. You just start
to
write.
It's so simple.
It's simple. Start to write and see what you gravitate towards.
Yeah.
I gravitate towards sci-fi and fantasy and horror because I get to create. I get to be really weird with it. I get to go deep into my subconscious and find the weirdest thing I can find and put it on paper. And that's not how everybody writes. Some people really like to write, you know, some people say, write what you know. What do you know? Write that. I don't want to write what I know. I want to write what I don't know.
Which in a weird way might be what you know.
I guess that's what I know.
Because you
what
said
I don't know.
You like creating, like what feels most authentic to you is creating worlds.
Yeah.
So that is what you know. Like when you look back to yourself when you're a little girl, because I think creativity is innately connected to the inner child. When you look back on yourself as a little girl, like what were the signs that this is what you would do now?
I think I was obsessed with imagination play. I was always creating worlds. Me and my sister had a show that we would sit in front of the mirror and we would pretend we were on a TV show like all the time. I just loved to escape into fantasy worlds and magic worlds. And, you know, I love to read, but I love to create way more. Mm. I love to see what I could come up with. When I was six, I had an imaginary friend that was an alien dog named Rupert. Like, it's just like...
Shout out to Rupert.
Shout out to Rupert, he's wherever you are. I'm sure he's with somebody right now, not me. But it's just like my brain always wanted to be playing. I always wanted to be doing something fun. I mean, it just was natural. It was natural to go towards a fun job.
And so you do the Jurassic Park show. How did you end up with the ponies?
It was just an introduction through people I knew. It was actually the co-EPs who worked on Jurassic World introduced me to the story editor on My Little Pony, and then I met with her. It's everything in this job is who you know.
Yeah.
It's who you know. It's but always
to be clear, you didn't know anyone when you moved here.
I didn't know a single person when I moved out here. Correct.
Yeah. So, okay. So for someone listening who's like, well, I'm in East Lansing right now. Like, how do I get to LA? What would be your advice for starting to get to know people? Like, how did you start getting to know people?
The thing I always say is don't make contacts, make connections.
Yes.
We all want to work with our friends. We all want to help each other. We want to help our friends. Our friends want to help us. And it's not about meeting people. It's about connecting with people. It's about mm-hmm. making friendships, building friendships. You said that I've always been supportive of your career, right? And that's because I think that is so important, the power of encouragement. Like mm-hmm. we have to be helping each other. And you're more likely to do that when you're building friendships.
Yeah.
When you're talking to people you want to talk to, you know? There's never going to be a good outcome of trying to force a connection with someone that it's not working with because mm-hmm. it feels transactional. If you're building friendships, then those friendships are always going to help lead you up.
Yeah. And I also say to our sweet little MSU student listening, like people in LA, if you decide to move here, they will be like, so what do you do? And it's very aggressive. It's like a very aggressive first question that you more often than not get. But I would encourage you to share who you are instead. So my name is Lauren. I was raised in Metro Detroit. I'm 100% Italian. I went to Michigan State University and I love writing music and podcasting. And that's so much better than like a weird small headline of a job title.
I'm a writer.
Yeah, which I'm a writer is still great because I think that's part of who you are. But you build so much more connection when you answer from an authentic place. And then it kind of disarms the person who asked you that question too, to go from, well, what can you do for me? To, oh, we're just two people here. Okay.
I always say be authentic and ask for advice.
Yeah.
Because I think that a big mistake people make is that they're trying so hard to sell themselves that they don't realize that a lot of people who are older who have been doing it are wonderful resources for them. And people love giving advice.
Oh my God.
They love giving advice.
Love
they love it. Feeling useful. So if you can go out and you cannot make it about, hey, this is how good I am and I'm this and I'm that, and to say, I can see that you're doing something I'd love to do. How can I be better? Mm-hmm. What can you share with me? I think that's already a place of authenticity that people will relate to.
Totally. And one thing I wish I had done more when I was younger is admit what I didn't know, to your point.
Facts.
Like, I thought that I had to have everything figured out. I thought if I don't know everything about the industry or I don't know how to do this particular job, then I look like a loser. That is not true. People, especially people who are older than you, want to help you. And when you can come to them humbly and say, like, this is my passion, this is my skill set, and this is what I want to learn, to your point, they want to help. It disarms people when you admit what you don't know, when you can get vulnerable. So just try that, babes, and you'll be fine.
Reach out to people.
Talk about that, because okay. I still struggle with that.
Yeah.
Here I am, 35, still struggling with reaching out to people and saying what I want. How did you do that and what did you say?
I think about it from my own perspective. When people email me, I respond. So that means I'm not the only person in the world. I'm not the only person in the world that's going to respond to an email somebody sends me. So when people email me, I respond. Therefore, I should be able to email people and someone's going to respond. And sometimes they don't. Sometimes they don't. And that's okay. I think that people are so afraid to look stupid or be embarrassed. And you don't get anywhere if you don't try. You just don't. So I'd rather try and nothing comes of it than have an opportunity right in front of me and just go, yeah, but I'm going to look stupid.
So let's say there's somebody doing something that you want to do and you're not doing it yet. And you want to reach out to them and say, hey, I'm interested in this thing. And potentially like see if there's an opportunity with them. Like, how do you phrase that?
I think it's just, again, comes down to authenticity. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's about saying, this is the thing I want. Can you help me? As much as this is the thing I'm striving for. Do you have any advice? I really believe asking for advice is so much better than asking for help, because advice often leads to help, but it doesn't feel so transactional. It feels authentic and maybe I can't help you. Maybe you reach out to me and I can't help you, but I know somebody who can help you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's building genuine connections. Every time you build a genuine connection, it's genuine and people want to help you.
Yeah. And when you reach out for advice, do you offer something too? Like, I don't know, maybe this is just my own stuff I need to work through in therapy. But like, I always feel like, okay, well, I have to offer something. So if I'm reaching out for something in music, like I have to be like, well, I know a lot about podcasting, so I can help with that. Do you think that's necessary or do you just go for what you're actually looking for advice on?
You just go for what you're asking for advice on because the world flows back and forth. I'm helping you this time. If you need my help in the future, then it'll come back to me. I really believe it's karma. You know, you do good for others and they do good for you. And not everything has to be equal.
Yeah.
Sometimes I can help you and you can't help me. And sometimes in the future, you can help me and I can't help you. It's just knowing that if you do good, good will come back to you, I think is just the way forward.
That's great advice. Okay. So we hang out with the ponies. What's after that and what's next as far as your writing journey?
I've done a lot after that. I've done a lot of preschool shows. I do a lot of older kids shows. I've done a lot of development. I've been working in features. I started a novel. I really believe that the journey, as we say, is just living life.
Yeah.
So there's so many things I want to do with my career. There's so many places I want to get to, but my focus is just enjoying myself now. Because every time I'm enjoying myself, it leads to more. If you're happy with what you're doing, if you're having fun, if you're feeling inspired, doors open and you don't even realize what you want to do next. There's so many things to do next. I could go so many. I could be on a podcast.
And she is.
And I am. Who would have guessed?
Because that's something I wanted to ask you about too. You have time in between writing jobs. So is that your advice? Because sometimes, I mean, I can speak for myself. When I'm in between creative opportunities, I'm like, oh my God, am I ever going to get something again? You can get into that anxiety and panic really easily. Is that the way you bring yourself through those in-between periods between writing gigs where you just really stay in gratitude and try to enjoy your life and go out and get inspiration?
I always tell people, enjoy the break while you have it. Because this career can be daunting. It can be a lot of work. It can be a lot of stress. And I would hate to waste my breaks worrying about when the next thing's going to come because it always comes. It always comes. Trust in yourself. Do the work. Keep writing. Don't give up. And it will come. And I always tell people to look for opportunities where you don't see them. I think a lot of people make a mistake when they move out to LA, especially I've met with a lot of students who have just graduated and they move out to LA and they're like, I just want to do this. So I'm only going for this. And it's like, take whatever opportunity comes to your door that looks like it has some potential.
Yeah.
Right? Don't turn any opportunity down because that showrunner of Kipo, Bill, I met him as a post supervisor. He rented an edit space. It had nothing to do with writing. It had nothing to do with anything I wanted to do. And it gave me my future because I took an opportunity in a space that had nothing to do with what I wanted to do, but it made me connections and it made me in the industry and it made me have fun and I was stable so I could write. It really, the opportunities are there if you're looking for them.
And don't feel like taking something like that means you failed. Because I think that's something I dealt with a lot when I first moved to LA. I was like, anything that isn't like acting, singing, and then it became hosting is failure.
Right.
And there's two things to this. Yes, like walk through the open doors. Walk through the doors that are opening for you. And like Lior, know when that door has served its purpose in your life and then close it. Because you can also get into a trap where you stay in a place for too long if you're not careful. And so it's so important to have both abilities to know, yes, it's important to walk through open doors and to know when to close those doors.
People tend to get stuck.
Yeah.
Out of fear.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't see the point in that. Maybe I'm crazy. You know, I believe in manifestation. I believe in all these things. But I just don't believe that there's a reason to not be happy. Like we should be happy in our life. We should be happy with what we're doing. I take jobs that I think are going to serve me in that moment. And if they don't serve me anymore, I move on. I see so many people who just stay in a job they're not happy in. And how are you ever going to manifest this great life for yourself if you're miserable every day? You're not going to. It's a negative energy.
So speaking to that though, I mean, if somebody really is struggling with fear and feels stuck, What's your advice to them on how to get out of it? Because logically, they know that what you just said is true. But there's some sort of deeper thing that's keeping them cemented in the ground.
It's fear.
Yeah.
And we go back to the same thing I said earlier, which is figure out what you're most afraid of and do that. If you're that afraid to do it, it's probably what you should do.
Mm.
It's most likely the right path forward because you're afraid because there's something to lose. And, you know, money's a thing.
Yeah.
Money is a thing. We need it. We all need it. But it also tends to come in many different ways if we're willing to take opportunities that we don't think we want to take.
Yeah.
I took any job that felt right to me. I took any job. I worked as a post supervisor. I worked at a reality studio. I worked on set. I was a producer on a documentary. I worked as a stand-in. I've done it all. And it all led me exactly where I wanted to go because I was always honest about my truth too. If somebody asked me what I wanted to be, I said I was a writer.
Yes.
And I was following a path. And when people hear that you're authentically following your path and you're still taking chances on yourself, I really believe people want to help you.
You've mentioned feeling a lot of times. Where does that live in your body? Like when you say it feels right, I followed a job because it felt right. I think these are important tools to develop younger in life because then we don't go through doors that aren't for us. Where do you feel the feeling when it's like a deep knowing and what does it feel like?
I mean, I think we all have our gut instincts, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I truly believe that's just our subconscious mind. It knows something we don't know. Maybe it's the future, maybe it's the past, maybe it's a warning. But I think we know, we can look at an opportunity and we can go like, this has nothing to do with what I want to do, but I feel like I should do it. That's your intuition telling you, hey, you don't know why yet, but this is right. This is good. Go this way. Just like there have been opportunities where I've gotten that I'm like, ooh, this feels bad. This doesn't feel good. And you know what? They weren't good. I might have grown from them. They might have been helpful in my career, but they weren't good. They weren't good experiences.
Hello, sweet creative cutie. I have amazing, exciting news. Unleash Your Inner Creative is nominated for a Webby Award. If you don't know the Webby Awards, they are the biggest honor on the internet, and they're not just for podcasters. I mean, like, huge people are nominated, like Jimmy Fallon, and I think Hoda Kotb from the Today Show. Like, I've seen her on the Webby website, at least. So it is a huge moment, and I am by far the smallest podcaster in the category that we're nominated in, which is creativity and marketing. If you like the show, if it means something to you, if you just like supporting the underdog, it literally takes less than 2 minutes to vote for Unleash, and it makes such a big difference. I'm going to put the link in the show notes. It's also at the link in my bio on Instagram, or you can find it on the Webby website if you just search Unleash Your Inner Creative in the voting section. But if you have a little extra time and you want to support the show, this would be a huge deal for us to win a Webby. And it would just mean so much to me and to the show. So if you believe in me like I believe in you, go ahead and vote for Unleash in the Webbies. Thank you so much. Love you. This is just something I'm curious about. Like when you're writing a script, do you do an outline first? Do you know where you're going? Or are you kind of just like letting the Holy Spirit infect you and you're just like writing?
That's a great question. Everybody has a different answer to that, but I myself am what they call a pantser. I fly by the seat of my pants. I don't know what I'm going to write before I write it. I believe that the idea lives deep in my subconscious, and I don't know what I'm going to say before I put it to paper. I sit down and I just start typing, and suddenly I'm like, where did that come from? Which is something I really had to learn how to change when I became a professional writer, because you don't have the luxury of just doing it your way. You have to write the outline. You have to write the premise. You have to get everything approved by steps. So I did have to sort of hone that skill of writing outlines and stuff for my professional stuff. But when it comes to my own work, I like to let my brain just do the work for me.
So would you, when you had to kind of backtrack and do it differently than you normally would you write the script first and then do the outline? Like, how did you make that happen?
Professionally?
Yeah.
No, you know what I did? I started writing very in-depth outlines, way more in-depth than a normal person would, because I was almost writing it as if I was writing the script. And then I would step it back. I would write dialogue that I didn't need to write, and I would write details that I didn't need to write. And then I would take it out and I would put it somewhere else for the future for when I am writing the script. But I would sort of move it towards an outline slowly. And now, you know, now I've learned how to just do it in outline form, but it did take time to learn.
And you mentioned something earlier that I thought was really pertinent and important. You said that like writing is only 20% when you're actually putting pen to paper, quote unquote. What is the rest of the 80%? What does that actually look like?
It looks like going out into the world and observing. It looks like thinking. It looks like talking to people. It looks like networking and reading other people's books. There are so many parts to writing that are not actually writing. I always say it's a triangle. You either have to have the innate ability, the skill, or the networking. Like you have to have two of those three. I started off with the ability to network. I'm a people person. I'm an extrovert. I had the innate ability and the skill, the craft of actually writing a good script with theme and, you know, beginning, middle, and end. That was what I needed to learn.
Yeah.
So I think you have to have more than just the ability to put pen to paper to be a writer.
Yeah. And what is part of your creative process that doesn't seem like it would be part of it? Like, I know you love walking. Is that part of your creative process?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. Like, literally. Yeah. So you should know, in Lior's bio, it comments about how much she likes walking.
Yeah. People are all like,
what are your hobbies?
What are your hobbies, Lior? And I say, walking. Well, I used to say writing, but I can't say that anymore.
Yeah.
Now I'm getting paid to be a writer.
Now it's your profession.
So now it's my profession. No one's paying me to walk, although I wish they would.
Someday.
I'd be rich. I love walking. I love clearing my head. I think you find your best stories in silence. I think a lot of people are afraid of silence. And I like to observe. I like to go and sit places and just watch people. When I'm feeling blocked, because everybody has writer's block, not just you, whoever you are.
Listening.
We all have writer's block. The best thing to do is to just live your life.
Yeah.
To go out, to talk to people, to ride a roller coaster, to travel to a country, to go to a coffee shop you've never been to. Living your life is the best way to clear your writer's block. So I do a lot of that.
Okay. I don't know about you, but since I was 22, my definition of success has changed significantly. What is your current definition of success? What does it mean to be successful to you?
It definitely means something different to everybody. To me, it means being happy, because there's been different points in my life where I didn't think I was successful, but everybody else did. Everybody always said, oh, wow, you're so successful. And I said, well, no, I'm not, because I'm not doing this, or I haven't done this yet, or I haven't done this yet. And I really realized that being successful means being happy. Chasing your dream is successful. I'm successful when I'm chasing my dream, even if I haven't gotten there yet, because I'm doing it. They always say it's not about the destination, it's about the journey. And it's really true, because if you're enjoying your life, if you're doing what you want to be doing, if you're happy, you're successful.
Well, also, if you want one thing, what happens when you get there?
Then you just want another thing.
Yeah.
You just want another
thing. So it really is like, I struggle with this more than anyone. Like, I have such unrest when I don't know how the story is going to end, which, spoiler alert, is never. But like, I keep thinking that, like, if I can't be happy now, I'm not going to be happy once I get it, because I've gotten great things. And you know what? I have to tell you, like, when I was featured in People magazine, I was happy for 2 days and then I cried for a week, because it wasn't about getting the recognition. It was about, like, I was looking for validation through that recognition instead of within myself. And that's why I really do believe creativity is tied to self-love, self-trust, and self-knowledge. Because if we don't have those things in the journey, first of all, we're not going to feel we deserve to pursue our creative life. But we're not going to be happy once we do get our dreams. So, Lior, tell me this. What has your journey to self-love been? And where do you stand with it now? How do you cultivate it now?
I think I love myself by loving other people. Because I really think that we are all just the same person. Divided. We really are. And when I'm feeling bad about myself, the number one thing I think to do is to go and encourage somebody else, to go support somebody else, to help somebody else with their work. That makes me love myself, because I love to give love. And so when I'm giving love, I feel loved.
Yeah, I love that. And I mean, I have to tell you, no one's ever answered that way on the show before in like 270 guests.
Oh, wow.
But it is so true and so beautiful. Like, if you really do believe, I believe we all come from the same source and we're all, intricately tied to each other. Actually, when I used to walk on Michigan State's campus, I used to picture literal strings going from my heart to other people.
No.
And I swear to God, you're right, Lior, because whenever I would do that, it would be like when I was in depressed or anxious states, I would do that. And all of a sudden, like I would say prayers for people walking by me. I would picture these strings. And then my day would start going better. And yeah. Then I would start feeling like I had access to self-love. And I would start feeling like things aren't really that bad. That's just such a great hack to drop into self-love quickly that we wouldn't think of. We would think it would have to be like all self-generated. But like we talked about before, we can't do anything alone, including love ourselves.
Yeah.
Wow. I love that.
Yeah. Love, love, love.
And then you've talked about trusting yourself a lot. If somebody listening right now feels like, I don't know if I can trust myself, what are ways to stair-step up to self-trust? Because you have to have that to build a career when you're doing something that doesn't have a path laid out in front of you.
I mean, I think it boils down to just having a little faith. That means different things to different people. But I do believe we all deeply know what we're good at, what we're capable of, and we get in our own ways. So just do it. I mean, not to be Nike about it, but like, just do it. Just take a chance on yourself. What's literally the worst thing that could happen?
Yeah. And I think too, like a lot of times I feel like I can't trust myself when I say I'm going to do something and I don't do it. So if you tell yourself you're going to do something, do it. Or if you're not going to do it, you have to have like a reason why, so that you know that there is some sort of greater plan and that you can trust yourself to do the things you say you're going to do.
Set small goals.
Yes.
I hear people all the time setting these lofty goals of like, I'm going to be this, I'm going to be that. And it's like, that's great. Maybe will be and you should be, but start small.
Yeah.
What are you going to be today? What are you going to be tomorrow? I have friends that say, I'm going to write for 8 hours a day.
Oh my God.
How about two?
8 hours is so long.
Why are we setting ourselves up to fail?
Yeah.
Because then when you don't write for 8 hours a day, you're like, I'm a failure.
I'm not a writer. I haven't done anything. Yeah.
But what if you start with two or start with one? Can you write 1 hour a day? Can you write 2 hours a week?
Yeah. Even 10 minutes a day is huge.
Start small.
It's something. Since we're talking to a lot of younger people right now, like I just want to tell the sweet listener, it's okay if you don't have everything figured out within the first year of graduating, within the first 5 years, hell, maybe even within the first 10. I feel like I've just started to hit my stride in the past 3 years. And I felt like such a failure because I didn't have it figured out within 6 months of graduating college. And it's just not realistic. It takes a long time, sometimes a decade, sometimes 2 decades to build a career. And I know you don't want to hear that, especially not now when it seems like everything's so easy access and people are going viral on TikTok and just having these worldwide successful brands at your age. But that's not everybody's journey. And there is beauty in a longer journey.
You're never too old.
No.
You don't know when it's your time to come. You don't know when you're going to be a writer. You don't know when you're going to be a producer. Just because it hasn't happened yet doesn't mean it's not happening.
Yeah.
I really think that we fall victim to comparison.
Ugh.
We look at everybody and we go, well, that person got it at 25. Why am I doing it at 35? Or
yeah.
That person's way faster than I am at this or way beyond where I want to be. And it's, they're on their own journey. You're on your own journey. They look at you and there's something you have that they wish they had. So I think it's really important to, in a weird way, stay in your lane.
Yeah.
You're on your path. You're not on their path.
Right. And when you see somebody doing something you want to do, especially if they're in your circle, I think it's life saying to you, hey, that's actually for you. It's like it's showing you that you can have it because it's so close to you. And I heard somebody say once, like, instead of being like, well, why do they have it? And why don't I have it? And I should instead say, I'll have what she's having. We live in an abundant universe and there's space for all of us. And we all have our own journeys. And just because yours is taking a longer time, I heard this recently, maybe your dream is just delayed, not denied. So remember that as you're going about your path toward your dreams, it might take longer than you want it to. It doesn't mean you failed. Speaking of our younger selves, my final question, I want to go back to our sweet younger 22-year-old Lior in the Comm Arts building. She's just gotten her standing ovation. I've just very aggressively told her, if you don't move to LA and become a writer, you're making a mistake. I will murder you. If you two, if that version of you and you today were standing in the same room looking at each other, what do you think she would say to you today and why?
I think she would say, I'm going to do anything I can to get to where you are now. You know, because I truly believe I got to where I was supposed to be. And I'm not done.
Yeah.
I'm not done yet. I have a lot I want to do still, but I think she would be very proud of me.
And what would you say to her and why?
I would say, thank you. Thank you for doing everything that you did to serve me now. Because I always say, don't do what's right for you today. Do what's right for you in the future. Because when you set yourself up for the future, you are really taking care of all of you.
I'm so glad that you listened to my very aggressive advice, that it resonated, and that you've always listened to your own inner voice. And I think you're a great example for any sweet younger or older listeners right now on how to trust yourself, how to know your own inherent worthiness, how to work really hard, put yourself in the way of opportunities, and then shine. So thank you, Lior. I love you.
I love
and I'm
you.
Grateful for you.
Yes, thank you.
I'm going to cry now.
Don't cry. I'll hug you.
Yay. Thank you for listening, and thanks to my guest, Lior Barris. For more info on Lior and her upcoming project, she can be found on social media at Lior_B. She also told me she really likes LinkedIn, so you can find her there as well. And again, thank you. If you like what you heard and want to support the show, Unleash Your Inner Creative can be rated, reviewed, and found on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. It's also great to share the show with a friend and post about it on social media. You can find me at Lauren LaGrasso and at Unleash Your Inner Creative on all social platforms. Thanks to Rachel Fulton for helping edit and associate produce this episode. She can be found at Rachel M. Fulton. Thanks to Liz Full for the show's theme music. She can be found at Liz Full. My wish for you this week is that you embrace the importance of believing in yourself and others. Encouragement can be so pivotal in someone's creative journey and personal growth. So always do your best to be a mirror for others' talents. And remember to turn that mirror on yourself too and see yourself. I love you and I believe in you. Talk with you next week.